Recently, a small firestorm was ignited by Valerie Lucas MCUN, a government emergency management employee, who had the temerity to accuse preppers of selfishness. While your immediate reaction may be, as mine certainly was, are people really and truly this thoughtless? This question does deserve a proper answer, particularly as those who are easily influenced by the leftist media or who believe the state really and actually is the omniscient, omnipotent savior of our personal and corporate lives are actually asking this question. So, let's examine the issue. First, many preparedness types have, as part of their goal, the intent of helping neighbors and family who are unable, or unwilling, to prepare. In my own case, part of what I have in mind is assisting a large group of Down syndrome children that my church has taken under its wing. A group the state would do no more than warehouse if it were under their direction. Not all preppers feel this way, but I would bet my bottom can of stored tuna fish there is an exceedingly large percentage of preppers who feel similarly. One significant point of observation that has significant ramifications relative to preparedness is that, in my experience, the non-prepper type is generally of a socialist orientation. Of course, as most of you know, this approach was tried and found wanting all the way back in the Pilgrim era. Many of you are aware that when the Pilgrims first arrived, they worked out of a communal system. The result was starvation and death. As this approach did not work, they then privatized their system, and of course flourished. You can easily research this history yourself. But if one has any experience with human nature, it is immediately apparent why this didn't, and has never in history, worked. The issue is that human nature is imperfect and selfish, just as Adam Smith wrote about in The Wealth of Nations. A simple recognition of this basic aspect of human nature, and finding a way to work with this reality, rather than against it, provides the most good for the largest number of people, exactly as Smith wrote, and exactly as history has shown for anyone who has eyes to see. To do otherwise impoverishes people, and in times of crisis, will lead to otherwise avoidable deaths. Working with this reality of human nature, rather than at cross purposes with it, has brought the greatest good for people overall in both prosperous periods of history as well as difficult. For those of you with Judeo-Christian worldviews, this issue is why Alexander Solzhenitsyn called communism a Christian heresy. He argued the communist assumptions about human nature were completely off base and went against scripture. Long story short, the question is man perfectible? Particularly with the best and brightest, such as Hillary, George Soros, Al Gore, and Obama telling, nay, forcing, us what to do, or are all men fallible? And the dictum of Lord Acton correct that absolute power corrupts absolutely correct. There is an unbridgeable divide between these two assumptions, and this divide makes itself manifest in the Hamlet-like to prep or not to prep debate. The Fleet Street letter put this matter in perspective a number of years ago, and is worth quoting at length. There are two major traditions in Western political thought. The first is Aristotelian, logical, rational, centrist, mechanistic. You concentrate power and truth in the center and apply it outward, shaping the world according to plan. This was the guiding principle of the Roman Empire. It evolved into the Holy Roman Empire and the Church of Rome. Except for Switzerland, it has dominated politics on the continent ever since. Most recently, it has morphed into the European Union. The principle is simple: smart people can figure out how to run things, and should be allowed to do so. This was the idea behind Hillary Clinton's healthcare task force, and now Obamacare, as well as Japan Incorporated and even Adolf Hitler's National Socialist Germany. It has animated nearly every politician, each one of whom, as Garrison Keillor notes about Lakowagon children, are above average, in this century. But there is another tradition that is much less well understood. It is the tradition of the Roman Republic. Of English common law. Of Adam Smith and Immanuel Kant. Of Austrian school economists such as Ludwig von Mises and Friedrich Hayek and of pre-Rooseveltian American. It is organic, rather than mechanistic. The tradition of tradition, based on the recognition that people, no matter how smart, cannot replace thousands of years of accumulated experience. Experience is embodied in the evolved systems of values, customs, rules and traditions that people use to order and give meaning to their lives. A free market and a free society allow people to express these preferences, as well as allowing the process of social and civil evolution to continue. This tradition, in other words, is neither liberal nor conservative in the modern sense, but anti-political. Indeed, It is often seen as anti-intellectual because it denies the authority of intellectuals to tell the rest of us what to do, through the political process. Perhaps you, like I do, remember the best and the brightest who led the Vietnam War? How did that one work out? Or, if that news is too stale, perhaps you care to visit present-day Detroit, which was the first city to adopt the Socialist Model Cities program under Mayor Coleman Young a number of decades ago. Similarly, Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty was a quasi-socialist endeavor, which was intended to end poverty. You can judge for yourself what all those $9 trillion spent on this war resulted in. Hint, we now have just under 48 million on food stamps, up from 32 million when Obama took office, and with more poverty than ever. The basic misunderstanding is, as Frederick Bastiat wrote in The Law, socialism, like the ancient ideas from which it springs, confuses the distinction between government and society. As a result of this, every time we object to a thing being done by government, the socialists conclude that we object to its being done at all. We disapprove of state education. Then the socialists say that we are opposed to any education. We object to a state religion. Then the socialists say that we want no religion at all. We object to a state-enforced equality. Then they say that we are against equality. And so on, and so on. It is as if the socialists were to accuse us of not wanting persons to eat because we do not want the state to raise grain. There is yet another misunderstanding to clear up for those of Christian persuasion. Many point to Acts 2:24 in the New Testament as an argument for socialism when it states about the early believers, and all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. Dr. J. Richards addresses this superbly in his book Money, Greed and God: Why Capitalism is the Solution and Not the Problem by simply noting that the early Christians held things in common privately, voluntarily, and without compulsion. This is light years away from state-forced sharing and under compulsion. New book reveals how to win the mental and spiritual side of the preparation game. One more important observation that is applicable to the prepping community to consider is about charitable donations. When I donate my own money at present, I watch like a hawk where it is going and what it is doing. When my money goes for taxes to help others, for the few dollars that actually make it past the money-sucking gauntlet of bureaucrats, how much actually reaches its destination? Some research shows as little as 10% or so. As the saying goes, it is much better to teach someone to fish, rather than just give them a fish for a day. I can do 1,000 times more, with 1,000,000 times more love, for 1% of the money, than the government could ever dream of doing if I were left with my own money to donate as I wish. Similarly, preparedness is most optimally left to the individual, not the state. I am clearly not saying there is no place at all for the state to assist. However, it should be ancillary and very secondary in function. To do otherwise is to set expectations that can only be dashed, exactly as was seen during Hurricanes Katrina and Sandy. So, how does this relate to preparedness with potential future catastrophic disasters? In a collapse, whether it be Argentinian-slash-Greek-slash-Zimbabwe style, or EMP, or a global war, compassion must be personal and voluntary. Not only is it more effective, it is more ethical because it is more caring, more direct, and more efficient. In a collapse, there should be a voluntary exchange, and for those that are not prepared, there should be some type of assistance rendered by the one who is not prepared. It could be cooking, gardening, carpentry, or even guard duty. Where this is not possible, simple humanity and compassion should, and undoubtedly will be, the hallmark of many preppers. In a serious collapse, there may well be a need to choose whom one would help, or not, but that is a decision that will be very personal. For myself, in contrast to the government representatives who so condescendingly accuse preppers such as myself of being self-centered, I will indeed, as noted above, look to help the weak and helpless. You may object by saying a lot of good that will do. We should, as per people like Dr. Peter Singer, just let the weak die. To which I reply, a society that only values those of utility is not a society worth keeping. And in fact, is precisely the type of society, with its abortions, euthanasia, etc. that got us into this mess in the first place. Another point, I would be remiss not to mention in the context of this article the very self-apparent fact that for every person who is prepared, that is one less mouth to feed in a real crisis. This needn't be addressed further, as it is patently obvious. But it is yet another reality that the debunkers always seem, somehow, to neglect to address, though it is staring them right in the face. The regular silence by these debunkers about this very issue is a stark testimony to what is either a lack of critical thinking or a purposeful lack of honesty when examining the relative merits of preparedness. God has written self-preservation into our very DNA. Certainly, from a Judeo-Christian perspective, each individual person has the right to self-preservation. The Bible is replete with laws allowing for self-defense in the Old Testament, and even in the New Testament, while unequivocally admonishing believers to be peaceful and forgiving. Even Christ instructed his disciples to be prepared in Luke 22:36 when he said, "But now if you have a purse, take it, and also a bag, and if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one." There are, historically, several approaches to defense in the Bible: complete pacifism, the use of police force, and just war, but that is beyond the scope of this paper. Suffice to say that self-defense is well within the historical understanding of options for Christians in a violent world, although admittedly this can be a difficult issue to navigate, and there is a range of conclusions which sensible people can come to within the pale of faith. Similarly, I extend this self-defense conception into the realm of preparedness. I think the extension is fair and reasonable, about which reasonable people can disagree in some areas. Also, relative to preparedness and faith, Proverbs 27:12 explicitly states, and which passage many preparedness types are familiar, a prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. In a world where well-regarded individuals like Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff of Boston University state the total amount of unfunded liabilities, federal, state, municipal, and corporate, are now a staggering $222 trillion, where the amount of derivatives, which Warren Buffett famously once called financial weapons of mass destruction, worldwide makes that amount look like a molehill, in a nation where people like John Kerzini can lose $1.6 billion and simply walk away without a day in jail, where lives are lost during Fast and Furious and people just shrug their shoulders, or a nation about which Billy Graham's wife Ruth once said if God doesn't judge America, he'll have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah, is preparedness unwise? Leftists may object, and that is their prerogative. However, if they wish not to prepare, then perhaps they ought to take to their own hearts and written commentary the one thing they forcefully invoke for everyone else in every other situation: tolerance. What business of theirs is it? With all due respect to them, why is it our non-prepper friends, as exemplified by the written commentary of Ms. Lucas MCU and noted above, cannot practice what they presumably preach about tolerance? Why must people like this actively vilify those with whom they disagree? But of course, the answer is obvious: just as in the days of Imperial Rome, everyone but everyone must bow to the all-encompassing supremacy of the state. To do otherwise means crucifixion. 2,000 years ago, this was in the arena. Today, it is the high-tech lynching of a Clarence Thomas, the fashion execution of a Sarah Palin, or the mere thuggery against those of us who beg to disagree with big government by modern-day Kristallnacht Alinsky ruffians. The whole area of faith and preparedness admittedly needs much further and deeper exegesis, but hopefully this scratches the surface of the subject and opens up additional conversation. But even for the non-believer, one's body is wired for self-preservation. And if nature is all that exists, logically one has no basis to backtalk against one's DNA, which has written self-preservation into the body. From either a biblical or non-biblical perspective, self-preservation is an intrinsic good. Why should preppers then be castigated? One final, and extremely telling, point about selfish preppers. The woman who wrote this disparagingly of preppers was a government worker. This means she makes a good living off of private sector people such as myself. As a matter of fact, I cannot currently make adequate preparations for my family because I have to provide a princessly salary and retirement package for her. The average government worker may make a third more in salary than a private sector worker, and retires much, much earlier. But here is the kicker: if there is a disaster, which will mostly likely brought about by yet another miscalculation by the self-proclaimed best and brightest, again, think Vietnam, the internet bubble, long-term capital management, John Kerzini, the housing bust, etc., do you know where these important will people go? They will go to official locations called continuity of government shelters. In other words, if there is a miscalculation, and a nuclear war or an EMP or biological attack starts, They are all set to retreat to giant, specially built, lavishly equipped caverns, while you and I fend for ourselves, due to a mess of their creation. Any word from our preppers or selfish commentariat on that? Why not? If nothing else in this article sinks home to you, this should make crystal clear the hypocrisy behind the prepper criticism. The truth is, just as we see with today's cronyism in high places, as George Orwell so aptly noted, in the socialist workers' paradise, we'll all be equal. Only some of us, usually them, will be more equal than the others. Just ask Nancy Pelosi why her Congress exempted themselves, their cronies, and their districts from Obamacare if you don't believe that. In sum, I prepare the same reason all my ancestors did each fall. I don't know what the winter, or in this case, the future, will bring. While for believers, God has promised to be with us and sustain us. As the old saying goes, we can't ask God to direct our steps if we are unwilling to move our feet. I trust, and my feet move.